There's a lot of division in our nation, and some of it revolves around race. It would be helpful, though, if we all realized that every human being is a part of the human race. Moreover, my life and your life have value, not because of our race, ethnicity, social status, wealth, looks, or ability. Our lives have value because each one of us is created in the image of God. If we all realize this, we can value and respect each other despite our differences.
Welcome to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center. And now for today's message, here's Associate Pastor Brian Longworth.
Last week we began a sermon series on critical race theory and its implications. And really, to understand critical race theory, we really need to go back to the beginning. To go much beyond even current times, but to go back not even to the founding era, but even prior to that. You may have heard the phrase. I've heard it. I've heard politicians say it. I've heard President Biden say it, that slavery is America's first sin. Now, we're going to actually look at slavery. We're going to look at the bad, the ugly. We're going to also expose some things that you may not have known about slavery in America and slavery throughout the world. And we will look at the Bible and look at the actual very first recorded instance of slavery that we have. But first, you may have heard, again, that slavery is America's first sin. This comes from the 1619 Project. I am, by the way, going to be today referring to a video by historian David Barton. You can watch this on YouTube. We'll link to it on our website under the comments or under the section for this sermon, also on our Facebook page, Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center. Our website is covenanttabernacle.com, and on our Facebook page, Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center, our YouTube channel, Covenant Tabernacle. But David Barton has a video called "Debunking the 1619 Project: Is America Racist?" David Barton teaches on the truth about America. Also, his son, Tim, spoke at a pro-life legislators conference, and his speech or his presentation was titled "A Response to the 1619 Project." So he's actually looking at the 1619 Project. If you're not familiar with the 1619 Project, Nicole Hannah Jones, one of the people in the New York Times, came out, and the premise of the 1619 Project is that America did not become America in 1776, when we actually did become America, separating from Great Britain. The premise is America actually was birthed in 1619, and 1619 becomes significant because that's when the first shipload of slaves arrived in Jamestown, Virginia. And that's when America started, according to the 1619 Project. It was a birth of slavery. It was all birth on slavery. In fact, there is a kind of, here is the kind of their founding statement. The 1619 Project is a major initiative of the New York Times observing the anniversary of the beginning of American slavery. It aims to reframe the country's history, understanding 1619 as our true founding, and placing the consequences of slavery and the contributions of Black Americans to the very center of our story we tell ourselves about who we are. They also, in the 1619 Project, claim that all black people were fighting for the actual abolition of slavery and to make themselves free, and that the whites were actually oppressing them. In fact, they don't even mention the whites that actually were abolitionists. They don't mention the states that abolished slavery. They don't mention that even before 1776, our country, actually, there were states that had actually passed legislation to abolish the slave trade. That legislation, by the way, was overturned, overruled, or vetoed by the King of England. So they don't mention any of that, but they do mention some things that really aren't 100% true, 100% accurate. Now, what happened in Jamestown? Of course, Jamestown was really the first colony, and it was the colony that really was not founded on religious liberty. The people that founded Jamestown were here for one thing primarily, and that was money. They were here to make money, and they were here to really, they grew a lot of tobacco in Jamestown. And one of the phrases that was told was, "Damn your souls, make tobacco." The people were not people that were here for religious liberty like the Pilgrims and the Puritans. This will come into you'll come to see why this is really important, because the second ship didn't land in Jamestown. The second ship with slaves actually landed in Plymouth, where the Pilgrims were, and there was a very different outcome. But what happened in Jamestown was that there was a slave ship from Portugal that was out in the ocean, and there was a lot of piracy that was going on back then, and there were two British ships that were out there also, and the British ships actually attacked the Portuguese ship, and they got some of the slaves off of the Portuguese ship. Now, they actually had 19 slaves that were on this Portuguese ship, and that's really what we know, the best number that we know. Now, since they were close to the colony in Virginia, Jamestown, they actually brought the slaves onto the property or onto shore there at Jamestown. So you have these 19 slaves that come to Jamestown. Now, by the way, there wasn't slavery at this time in America. And those 19 were not kept as slaves. They were kept as indentured servants. They were kept as indentured servants for 7 years. They were cared for. Of course, you may say, well, you know, that's not the type of care we want. I mean, it was very much like slavery, but it did have an expiration, and that was 7 years. They actually served for 7 years, and they earned their freedom. And not only were they set free, but they also were given land at that time. Now, one of those slaves who was then turned into an indentured servant, who then later became a free man, one of those wanted to bring additional people over from Africa as indentured servants, and he would pay money, and basically he was buying slaves. He would pay money. These indentured servants would work for him for a certain period of time, probably up to 7 years. And what would happen is he would release them. This man was from Africa. He was, again, one of the first slaves. He was who then became an indentured servant, who was then made free. He wanted to bring others to America and set them free. But one of his indentured servants was extremely lazy, and he determined that there was no way that he was going to be able to recoup his cost of buying the man and bringing him to America and actually caring for him, providing him food and so on. There was no way he was going to be able to recoup that cost unless he had the ability to have his service for longer than 7 years. So he went to court, and he actually, in court, won the right to own this man forever until he died. And that was the very first actual instance of slavery. It wasn't a white man oppressing a black man. It was actually a black man going to court and earning the quote-unquote right to own another black man. That's something that you probably haven't heard before, unless you've listened to David Barton or Tim Barton, or you've listened to some of our sermons here. But that is truth, and it is something that you need to actually realize that 1619 actually was not the beginning of slavery. The beginning of slavery was when a black man sued, and he was trying to bring additional people from Africa, buying them as slaves, but setting them free after 7 years. And so what we see is we see them being set free, and then this one guy is lazy and he sues and has the right to own him for life. That's the beginning of slavery. Well, in the Bible, we do see, and by the way, one of the things that is commonly thought is that slavery actually started in America. And that's not true. Slavery has existed for long periods of time. We're going to read in the Bible in Genesis, starting in Genesis chapter 36, we'll actually read, chapter 37 of Genesis, we'll actually start reading the very first recorded instance of slavery. And this comes to us from the Bible in Genesis chapter 37. But at the time of America's founding, slavery was common throughout the world, and you could actually go to cities, major cities throughout the world, and buy slaves. So just know that slavery was not unique to America. That doesn't make it right that other nations did this as well, but it was accepted practice at that time. And it was really not until Americans, up until the founding era, when our founders started to grapple with the rights and freedom. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And they actually realized that this is not 100% true. There are blacks in our area that are actually slaves. By the way, blacks were not the only slaves, and there have been slaves from all different races throughout history. Even in America, there have been black men, as we mentioned, that have owned black slaves. There have been white men that were slaves in America as well. And it's important that we know the truth, that we know, that we accurately understand history. In Genesis chapter 37, though, we see really what happens with Joseph, who was, by the way, not a African-American or someone from Africa. He was not black. He was really part of the start of the Jewish nation. Kim, he also had dreams that indicated that his brothers and even his father and his mother would bow down to him. And this made his brothers very, very envious. They envied him in verse 11 of chapter 37. His brothers envied him, but his father kept this matter in mind. In verse 12, then his brothers went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." And he said to him, "Here I am." Then he said to him, "Please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks, and bring back word to me." So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron, and he went to Shechem. Now a certain man found him, And there he was, wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, "What are you seeking?" So he said, "I'm seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they are feeding their flocks." And the man said, "They have departed from here, for I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. Now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. Then they said to one another, "Look, this dreamer is coming. Come, therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit, and we will say, 'Some wild beast has devoured him.' We shall see that what will become of his dreams." But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, "Let us not kill him." Also Reuben said to them, "Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father." So it came to pass, when Joseph had come to his brothers, that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. This was the coat of many colors that his father had made for him. Then they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat a meal. Then they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing spices, balm, and myrrh, and on their way to carry them down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hands be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh." And his brothers listened. Then Midianite traders passed by. So the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. Then Reuben returned to the pit, and indeed Joseph was not in the pit, and he tore his clothes. And he returned to his brothers and said, "The lad is no more, and I, where shall I go?" So they took Joseph's tunic, killed a kid of the goats, and dipped the tunic in the blood. Then they sent the tunic of many colors and brought it to his father and said, "We have found this. We do not know whether it is your son's tunic or not." And he recognized it and said, "It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, "For I shall go down into the grave to mourn to my son in mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Now the Midianites sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. So here you see his own brothers actually plotting to kill him. Reuben delivers him and his intent to actually deliver him and bring him back to his dad. But while Reuben is away, Judah says, let's just sell him as a slave. Now, although this is the first recorded instance of slavery in the Bible, it's evident that slavery existed even then, because they didn't have to go to the Ishmaelites, the Midianites, and explain to them what they were actually asking or what they were proposing. This was common knowledge that they could actually buy Joseph and then be able to sell him once they got to Egypt. And you know, if you know the story, we're gonna look further at the story. Actually, skipping a chapter in verse 39, what actually happened? Again, Joseph is sold as a slave to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. And so Joseph here is serving as a slave in a foreign land. Really, one of the things that you know when you read the story of Joseph, he actually, in the foreign land, they spoke a foreign language. He had to learn that language in this foreign land. While he was there in the house of Potiphar, God had mercy upon him and had favor upon him. The Lord was with Joseph, it says in chapter 39, verse 2. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. So Joseph was serving with excellence, and God was blessing him. And so Potiphar puts Joseph over his entire house, and he has everything that he could actually, you know, he has access to everything in the house except for Potiphar's wife. But Potiphar's wife, Joseph was a handsome man, the Bible says, and Potiphar's wife wanted to lie with him, commit adultery with him. Joseph knew that this was a sin and did not want to do this. She's pleading with him. Now think about this. Many men, if they weren't scrupulous, if they weren't moral, if they didn't care about honoring God, would gladly jump at the opportunity. Potiphar's wife was probably beautiful. It is pleasurable for a man to lie with a woman. Yet Joseph refused and kept refusing. And one day he was alone with Potiphar's wife. She grabbed him and said, "Lie with me." And he fled and actually left his tunic with her. And she then falsely accused him of attempting to rape her. Joseph then is sold as, he was sold as a slave, but now he's actually put into prison, and he's serving prison for a crime he didn't commit. Kind of like the A-team, who was in prison for a crime they didn't commit. Joseph is in prison. So just think about what happened in his life. He went from being a free person, he went from having the blessings of God to being sold as a slave. And as a slave, he didn't grumble and complain. He wasn't lazy. He was working diligently, and God was blessing him. He was put in charge of his master's house, and then he has the opportunity to lie with his master's wife. But because he's moral, because he wants to honor God, because he fears God more than pleasure, he respects and values the fear of God and obeying God more than he values pleasure, he's actually put into jail. And in jail, God again blesses him. And he's actually put into a position of authority in jail. So again, he's serving even in jail. And you may remember that there were two of Pharaoh's servants that were also put into jail. They have dreams. They didn't know what the dreams meant. Joseph interprets the dreams. One of them was put to death. The other one was lifted up and restored to his position, all in accordance with the interpretation that Joseph gave. And then what happens is the one that was restored forgot about Joseph until Pharaoh had a dream. When Pharaoh had a dream, he remembers about Joseph, And what happens next is that Joseph is brought from prison into the presence of Pharaoh, and Joseph actually goes from, again, he went from being a brother, a free man, to being a slave, from being a slave to being imprisoned. From being in prison, he goes to being the second ruler in the nation. And you know that his brothers came to visit him. His brothers came to visit him in Egypt. And when Joseph reveals himself to his brothers are scared and they are shaking. And Joseph says in verse 5 of chapter 45 of Genesis, "But now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sent me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years, the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance." So Joseph, and by the way, he tested them prior to this. He didn't just forgive them. He proved them to see whether they had repented or not. But Joseph was not bitter. He was not saying, "Woe is me." He was not looking at what had happened to him in the past and saying, "Well, this is why I've had a difficult time." Joseph was actually looking at God's purpose in that process. And you see that the very first instance of slavery actually was resulted in the deliverance of the nation of Israel, which would eventually lead to the birth of Jesus Christ, who is our Savior. Imagine if Joseph hadn't become a slave, if he hadn't been put into jail, if he hadn't been put into a place of authority over Egypt, Israel would not be saved and we would not have Jesus. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.
You've been listening to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Join us each Sunday morning for The Lighthouse. If you've been blessed by this broadcast, visit www.covenanttabernacle.com, where you can give us feedback and make a donation.
There's a lot of division in our nation, and some of it revolves around race. It would be helpful, though, if we all realize that every human being is a part of the human race. Moreover, my life and your life have value, not because of our race, ethnicity, social status, wealth, looks, or ability. Our lives have value because each one of us is created in the image of God. If we all realize this, we can value and respect each other despite our differences.
More like you, Jesus, more like you, fill my heart with your desire to make me more like you. My little